Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, why the price of gasoline is defying the laws of supply and demand. John Horgan on being an optimist in a pessimistic time. And a call in asking, what's the best idea you've had in the last year? And more. We hope everyone first, however, will help out during our winter membership drive. We'll get right into all our topics in just under a minute. But if you haven't done it yet, we have a great incentive right now. Anybody who pledges by noon will automatically be entered in a contest to win a MacBook Pro and an iPad 2. Right now, we're giving away an iPad 2 and a MacBook Pro to one lucky winner. You are automatically entered when you call 1-888-376-WNYC or go to WNYC.org to make a pledge. You don't have to pledge to enter, but of course we hope you will to support WNYC with a contribution. The folks at TechServe have generously donated this iPad and MacBook Pro. Everyone who has pledged earlier in the drive or before the drive, or if you're a sustainer, you're automatically in. But for everyone else, the deadline is noon. So if you're going to support us anyway, might as well do it right now because we know you want that iPad. Forget even about the laptop. We know you want the iPad. But you would also get, if you're the winner, Apple's latest laptop, the MacBook Pro. So please support WNYC and you'll be entered to win 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-WNYC. 9692 or pledge online at WNYC.org. But you've got to do it by noon. Thanks, everyone, for supporting the station. All right. Capitalism 101, supply and demand. When the demand for something goes down, the price is also supposed to drop, right? Well, Americans are consuming less gasoline and home heating oil than we did a year ago, but the price... Robin Farzad from Bloomberg Businessweek is here. Robin, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
You went to Harvard Business School. When demand goes down, the price does what again?
I went to Harvard Driving School, actually. Whatever your resume here says is wrong.
Driving school.
Yeah, the price should fall. It should equilibrate. But as we've known for at least 10 years now, the price of oil, the price of gasoline is more of a Rorschach. You have a war premium built in. You have a terrorism premium. You have a speculative premium, a weak dollar premium to the extent that you have a flight into hard commodities such as gold and crude oil when the dollar is being debased. So it's really hard to just get right at that supply-demand cross and tell you what the true organic non-hydrogenated price is.
So now that the price of gasoline has peaked over $4 a gallon in New York, over $3.50 in New Jersey, which of those premiums do you think are kicking in the most to cause it?
Well, right now, let's not forget that you had Leon Panetta, the defense secretary, come out and say that there's a 50-50 chance that Israel strikes Iran. And then there could, in the meantime, be blockages in the Strait of Hormuz. You could have a lot more saber rattling. And that could lead to $200 crude and $6 gasoline. So there is that kind of psychological premium built in. And at the same time, the Department of Energy is saying that, lo and behold, the United States, for the first time since 1949, has become a net exporter of gasoline, diesel, and assorted fuels. So put that all together.
I want to come back to that in a minute, but I also want to open up the phones. Listeners, very simply, on a very practical help out your neighbor kind of basis, we want to know where the best gasoline prices that you know of in your neighborhood. Shout out the actual gas station and address to help your fellow listeners, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Or if you want to talk about the reasons for the price of gasoline and oil, you can do that too, the economics of it, the politics of it, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. But if you do want to help everybody out with the spot for the cheapest gasoline in your neighborhood, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Like, I live in Inwood, and it's not the Sunoco station. It's not the Getty station, to be sure. It's the BP station that has not even the Hess station. It's the BP station that has the lowest prices in Inwood right now, according to what I've seen cruising around the neighborhood, though more on my bicycle than
and I'm
in the
told
car.
You can actually drill for oil in the Gowanus and in Greenpoint. So talk about net exporters.
You just kind of put a spigot in the ground and a siphon, and you're ready to roll. But where were we? How much does the oil industry have us over a barrel, so to speak, pun intended? Here's what I wonder. It's like if the Knicks start to stink again, people will stop buying Jeremy Lin T-shirts. So the price of T-shirts will go down. That's because Jeremy Lin T-shirts are optional in our lives. But even if it's a warmer winter than usual, we still have to heat our homes somewhat. So the oil companies can just jack up the price to make up for the lower number of gallons sold. Is that too conspiratorial for you?
It's somewhat conspiratorial because the closest lesson we have is 2008, when even as we were going headlong into an economic crisis and an epic financial collapse, you had the price of oil in the summer of 08 go up to $147 a barrel. Now, that sows the seeds of its own demise. Yeah, the greatest way to get oil prices down is to have an economic collapse. And so it's not in the interest of these oil companies and these OPEC big machers to kind of force this on us. Right now, I think it's a function of the fact that there is a weak dollar in the United States. Oil is dollar denominated, so the price goes up. You have still huge demand from developing economies. This is not a new story. China will take any excess demand off the market. Yes, we've had a mild winter. Yes, there wasn't a big drawdown in heating oil, but the world is what the world is, and it's still extremely thirsty for those petro BTUs.
Joel at Union, you got a gas station for us? Joel, are you there? All right. Well, now we can hear you, Joel.
Okay,
hi.
Fine. There are two in a row in Hillside on Route 22 westbound coming out of New York, and I always drive to Newark Park and take the train into town, and on my way back I pass these stations and tank up. They're $3.47 a gallon, both of them. You can't miss them. It's right after the Toyota place. But I also want to speculate, could the gas companies, oil companies be jacking up their prices to make Obama less popular? He's certainly no ally of theirs.
And what about that? Joel, thank you. What about that political conspiracy theory?
That sounds like a great screenplay. Maybe we could take it straight to HBO or something. I just don't buy that. There's another thing happening, which is you can look at it half empty or half full. It seems like that they're more than incipient green shoots of an economic recovery. You suddenly have people worried about demand spiking back. The stock market is back up to pre-financial crisis levels. There's a wealth effect. And this kind of speaks to a codependency or a correlation that we have not been able to shake off for the better part of 5 years, that when the economy seems to do better, oil prices shoot up in tandem. And then that could potentially sow the seeds of an economic demise. So this is really a kind of a blunt instrument. It's something to worry about to the extent that we approach $150 oil again.
Joel had a liberal version of an oil company conspiracy theory regarding Obama. I've heard a conservative version too, which is that the oil companies, or just the markets really, it's not even so much a conspiracy theory, except that it is. Because they say the markets are reacting to the more likely prospect now of an Obama reelection by thinking, oh my goodness, Obama's going to be reelected, less drilling, weaker on Iran, and so the market sends the price of oil up.
Maybe that's another derivative on it. Who knows? If we took the pie of this $100 a barrel or wherever it is right now, maybe $3 of that could be ascribed to it. But then there's also the Saudis, who have no love lost for their Iranian neighbors and would love to flood the market if they perceive that that Tehran is weak and that Tehran is disproportionately dependent on the price of crude oil, that Iran has always been the spokesperson at OPEC who tried to keep supply low, tried to keep members honest to their quotas. And the Saudis aren't exactly flooding the plain in this perceived weak period for the Iranian regime.
Robin Farzad from Bloomberg Businessweek as we talk about the price of gasoline. Chris in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chris. Chris.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, Brian. I am a professional musician. I do shows all over, so I'm a freak for finding cheap gas. And just to remind you, I've called in many times over the years. I'm the guy who plays, among other instruments, the Japanese shakuhachi.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
I don't know how you get that embouchure. It's the hardest thing to do with your mouth. I've tried it.
Instrument.
But go ahead.
Anyway, in Waterbury, Connecticut, right off of 84, exit 25, the BJ's in Waterbury is like the cheapest gas that you find in Connecticut. I travel a lot to Connecticut. Their gas is a little cheaper than ours in New York here. But also, There's a U.S. gas or U.S. petroleum station right off the Meadowbrook, because I used to live in Long Beach, right off the Meadowbrook in Freeport. They're always cheaper than everybody. And then two stations to avoid, I live in Somers, northern Westchester. There's a Mobil and a Sunoco right down the road from each other in Somers on 100, and their gas is over the top expensive.
May I ask the caller, actually, do you just believe that all this stuff is fungible and interchangeable? You don't care if it's from a Sunoco or a Citgo or a BP or a Chevron, it's all the same?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've heard some people say, yeah, like, you know, Mobil is better gas, but I hate Mobil and they're such an evil corporation, I refuse to buy their gas. But I don't know. Do you know, is gas gas?
Is there? Wait a minute. And thank you, Chris. I think we have a caller with an opposite opinion on that he does prefer a certain brand of gasoline for the quality. Obi in Plainfield, do I have that right? Obi? 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 All right. I guess he's not there.
Maybe
so
we can
is
distill.
There a factual answer? Do we know?
I know gas stations owners who say it's absolutely not, that they take excess demand off other generic tanker trucks, and that, yes, there's marketing about 92 octane and whatnot, and we add special detergents to our thing, but in the end, it's all the same. I mean, you don't think about it when you have a rental car, frankly, and the rental car companies tell me that you shouldn't think about it for your own car.
Yeah, and that's my understanding from the little that I actually know about it. We did do a segment on this very question on the show one time, that the gasoline in the world tends to come from the same suppliers, and, you know, Sunoco buys it and BP buys it and
maybe you and I, we could have like a microbrew of this stuff. If you live up in Inwood, I think the zoning restrictions will allow you to make up a batch in your bathtub. I don't know.
Peter in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Yes. I have a question. When you talk about supply and demand, are you talking about worldwide supply and demand or just the United States, which totally changes the equation? However, before that, in terms of what you were just talking about, I just had my car fixed and my problem with the fuel injection, and my mechanic said, stop buying cheap gas. They don't have as much detergents in it, and it clogs up your fuel injection system. He could be wrong, but
we're going to do. Thank you, Peter. We're going to do a follow-up segment on this. I'm now officially promising with the car guys or somebody to
click
get
and clack.
Click and clack on the Brian Lehrer Show if we can swing it, or somebody like them to answer the question: does brand matter in terms of the quality of gasoline and how good it is for your car and stuff like that? But the global supply and demand question versus domestic supply and demand, I think, is really a great question because, for example, this debate over the Keystone XL pipeline, and Newt Gingrich is out there saying drill, baby, drill and build, baby, build, and he's going to have 250 gasoline by the end of his first term if he's elected president, and Obama's working against that kind of thing. Obama says, let me play a clip of the president right here.
When you start hearing a bunch of folks saying somehow that there's some simple solution, you can turn a nozzle and suddenly we're going to be getting a lot more oil, that's just not how it works.
Now, he says that's not just not how it works, because the other side of the Keystone XL argument is, after all that oil is brought from the tar sands of Canada all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico to be refined, those companies are going to sell most of it to the Chinese, because there's more demand in China. Therefore, the oil companies will get higher prices than they will get right here in the United States, even though it's refined just off the United States. Is that true?
To a certain extent, because I think the counterfactual of this is that you see cheaper gas prices in northwestern states that border kind of the Pacific Northwest area and where Canada's tar sands are, and that this stuff could be derived from easily deliverable synthetic crude that's brought in from those tar sands. So that could illustrate the potential if that pipeline was able to provision the rest of the lower, whatever, 45, then potentially you could have significantly lower gas prices. But then again, if it's up to the oil companies to earmark any sort of excess off to the ports and off to China, then you know that they will lap it up.
But let's end on a couple of things real quick. One, you said before, the U.S. has become a net exporter of gasoline. I saw that Thomas Friedman column in the Times the other day asking, should the United States join OPEC?
Yeah, North Dakota is now the bigger than the smallest member of OPEC. No joke. Bigger than Ecuador.
So what does this mean?
You know, there's a lot in this. Frankly, we have not even talked about the collapsing price of natural gas. And economists would tell you that there should be a substitution kick-in effect. Here in the city, we have natural gas bus fleets and whatnot, and that's been going on for a long time. And if you have a persistent divergence of kind of bang for the BTU buck, you're going to see car makers, you're going to see car companies come out with natural gas models, pushing clean diesel on you because you could get much more MPG on it. This isn't all going to ultimately be about the price of gasoline, per se.
And Jim in Roselle Park wanted to ask my last question anyway, so I'm going to let him do it. Hi, Jim, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Brian. I'd like to hear your guest speak to this point. When there was the sudden spike in prices about 3 years back, I recall there being, probably you heard it on your show, that it wasn't shortages, it wasn't refinery capacity, it was speculator money that was started to go into oil crude futures. There was a frenzy, it drove prices up.
Absolutely. We talked about this in 2008, speculation driving up the price of gasoline because of an anticipated shortage. Are we seeing that same kind of thing again?
It's really a tough villain to tar and feather in this case. As much as it feels like it's there, it's almost an invisible hand. It cuts both ways because these speculators get killed if the price of oil falls, and it only amplifies the decline. Having said that the Enron loophole where you could speculate on the price of oil and not actually take inventory of it is still open.
Robin Farzad, read him on Bloomberg Business Week or on his Twitter feed, which is what?
At RobenFarzad.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you,
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.